Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Do you feel a certain buzz in the air as of late? Well, if not now, you'll know it when you see your first one this spring. Then another. And before you know it, they'll show up by the trillions. Different legions have lived in hiding for decades, and now they'll join forces for the first time in over 200 years to invade us from coast to coast. It's the cicadas, and they're coming. I can almost hear them. Wait, hold on. Let me turn this up here. Yeah, there. It's the love ballad that will never make the top of the charts, but will be potentially inescapable in just a matter of weeks, carving out a unique time in horticultural history.
This is the first time it's happened since 1803. It won't happen again until 2245. So this is once in a multi-generation opportunity.
So what are we supposed to do with the trillion-some cicadas we're going to see this spring? Well, hear me out. This is just an idea. What if we ate them?
If you're open to trying something that's sustainable, it's nutrient dense, but really most importantly delicious, then maybe this is something that you'd be open to trying sometime.
I'm Jim Hanke, and this week, Bug Appetit. The cicadas are coming, and newsflash, they're tasty? Let's get looped in, Chicago. So in this episode, we'll talk a lot about broods, a term you've likely heard in all of this cicada chatter. Entomologists, those who study bugs, classify broods by a particular Roman numeral, almost like a Super Bowl. But broods are quite simply a group of periodical cicadas that emerge together, and within that brood, there can be several different types of species. So for brood 13, for instance, those are periodical cicadas that emerge every 17 years. So we saw them in 1973, 1990, and 2007. They'll return this year, and then we'll see them again in 2041. Brood 19 emerges every 13 years, which can get confusing. Like, why wouldn't brood 13 emerge every 13 years, right? Regardless, we've seen brood 19 in 1972, 1985, 1998, and 2011. They're back in 2024, and then again in 2037. Broods 13 and 19 have not been in sync for 221 years. And post-2024, they won't be in sync again for another 221 years. Think about that. The last time both broods were around at the same time, we didn't even have cards. And in another 221 years, what's the world going to look like? Ken Johnson is in Jacksonville, Illinois, about 35 minutes west of Springfield. And he's an extension educator of horticulture with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He points to his interest in agriculture at an early age coming from his parents, both educators themselves. His dad taught biology, and his mom, in her spare time, had quite the green thumb. Ken himself has gone on to give greenhouse tours at Disney World and to teach integrated pest management to farmers in Africa. So via Zoom this week, even behind his impressive red beard, it was hard not to see Ken's excitement talking about this rare natural event coming up. For someone in his line of work, going back to those Roman numerals I mentioned, this is like the Super Bowl on steroids.
Yeah, if you're an insect person or a cicada person, yeah, this is a pretty big deal. This is the first time it's happened since 1803. It won't happen again until 2245. So this is once in a multi-generation opportunity here. So it's pretty big deal, I would say, in my opinion. At least I'm excited for it. I know some people probably not so much, but
this is a different kind of March Madness for you, I think. Yeah. And I've heard cicadas as jokingly kind of being referred to as math geniuses. Where do we get the numbers of 17 years? Like, this seems like a very odd time for them to come out and have this be such a big deal. So what is it about them specifically that number is very important, and the why? I've heard it's because of predators maybe, but maybe you can articulate a little bit better.
There's a couple of theories as to why it's 13 or 17 years. So kind of the big thing is they're coming out 13 or 17 year intervals all at once. We have this mass emergence. So we're doing what's known as predator satiation. So basically they overwhelm the system. There's no way all the predators can eat all of them. So they're kind of guaranteeing that a lot of them are going to be able to not be eaten. They're going to be able to reproduce and kind of continue on that generation, because these cicadas don't have any defenses. They don't sting. They don't bite. They're not poisonous. They're not toxic. They're basically free game for anything that wants to eat them. So if you can overwhelm the system, overwhelm the predators, they can eat all they want, but there's still more coming. As far as 13, 17 years, there are some different theories as to why this is. Prime numbers would make it hard for the predators, potential predators, to sync their life cycle. So cicadas were coming out every 4 years. Potential predators could sync their life cycle with them, but with such a long time frame, that can't be divisible. That's one theory as to why. Another one has to do with the ice ages. When we had the glaciers coming down, it's a lot cooler. That may have slowed the growth of plants, which would have led to the slowing of the growth of cicadas. And then with everything slowing down, maybe they started syncing up their life cycle to kind of guarantee they're going to be able to find mates. So those are two of the theories as to why we've got this really long time frame with the emergences.
And these emergences in the lifespan of these particular insects are a blip in their otherwise very much under the radar existence. Before diving into their life cycle, Ken told me 13 or 17 year periodical cicadas spend 99.5% of their life underground.
So in the spring, they'll start digging tunnels up from the ground. They may be 8+ inches deep, feeding on tree roots. They'll start tunneling up and then they'll kind of hang out and wait until soil temperatures 8 inches deep reach 64 degrees. So a lot of times it's associated with rain. You get some rain in there, makes it a little bit easier to tunnel too. They'll start emerging. They're usually coming out at night. Or in the evening, they'll molt. The adults will emerge from those nymphal skins. They'll start to harden, and that can take several hours for them to kind of harden off. So they'll emerge, like, be kind of milky white when they first molt, and they'll start to darken into their black, if people have seen them before, but they're probably more familiar with. So they'll do that overnight, and then they'll start climbing up into treetops. And it'll take a few days for them to fully harden, but they'll get to the point where they can climb up to treetops. Several days after they've emerged, the males will start singing, and that's going to attract females. The females will come, they'll mate, and then they'll start laying their eggs in the branches of trees, usually about the width of a pencil, maybe a little bit bigger. They'll lay their eggs. 6-10 weeks later, eggs will hatch. The nymphs will drop to the ground. They'll start feeding on roots, and the cycle continues there.
So a big question for people learning about this brood awakening, if you will, is how will this affect my daily life? Will I be swatting cicadas away as I walk to the mailbox? Or will I need to dig my driveway out of exoskeletons? Well, Ken says it'll be a rarity if these two broods overlap much, if at all.
So the brood 13, this is a 17-year cicada brood. That's going to be kind of in the northern half of Illinois. Brood 19 is a 13-year cicada. They're more of the southern half. So I'm in Jacksonville. We'll have 13-year cicadas down here. People hear this double brood, and I think a lot of people think we're going to have two broods coming out in the same places. So we're going to have twice as many as we typically would when broods emerge. There's really not much overlap. There are a few places, Macon, Sangamon, Livingston, Logan counties may have both broods. Springfield has been thrown out a lot as one, an area that you could potentially see two broods. But from what I've heard, even then, there's not a tremendous amount of overlap in those counties. There's kind of a clear line where they're going to be merging. So in some areas, you may have both broods coming out, but it's not to any great extent anywhere in the state.
Let's talk about the noise that they make. This has obviously been a big topic as people talk about, you know, the influx that we're going to have. Should we be expecting, I guess, this constant dull buzz, but also just from the science aspect of it, how and why does that buzz happen? Like, what is the purpose of it, and how are cicadas doing that?
So depending on where you live and how many cicadas you have, it could get a little noisy this spring and summer. So if you have really high populations, I think I saw something from the National Institute of Health, they can reach 90 plus decibels, which is like a motorcycle or a lawnmower, and they'll be calling throughout the day. Then they'll stop at night, hopefully, so you'll be able to sleep. But during the day, it could get pretty loud if you live in an area where you have a lot of cicadas. As far as kind of why this is happening, so the males are singing. They have these special structures called timbals, which are on the tops of their bodies, and they will vibrate these rapidly, and this causes that noise to happen. And interestingly, the abdomens of the males are pretty much hollow, and that kind of amplifies that sound. And the males are going up into the treetops, and they'll kind of group together, and you have all kinds of males singing at once. So that amplifies it even more. So the more cicadas you have, the more that are singing, the louder it gets.
There's two things Ken wanted to communicate to listeners on what to prepare for during this cicada apocalypse. First off, potential harm to trees from eggs being laid in branches, usually about the width of a pencil. He says that if you have newly planted trees, this is something to try to protect them from, because they're just too young to take on that potential cracking and damage.
If you have large, mature, healthy, well-established trees, it's not going to be a concern. Again, this has been happening for thousands and thousands of years, and trees have survived just fine. If you have newly planted trees or shrubs or smaller plants, that's where the concern is. These plants don't necessarily have a lot of branches that they can afford to lose. So if you have a lot of cicadas laying eggs in there, all the branches get killed, your tree's going to struggle. Or if it's small enough where that trunk is small enough for them to lay eggs in, they start laying eggs in there, it gets damaged, it snaps, then you have the potential for that tree to die. So if you have smaller trees and shrubs or newly planted stuff, you're going to want to cover that in netting. The hole shouldn't be half inch, quarter inch in size, no bigger than that. And make sure you're securing that to the base of the tree, especially for small stuff that they can lay their eggs in the trunk. Bigger things, just make sure you're securing it to the trunk so they can't climb up the trees and get in there.
Secondly, Ken says that as the life cycle of periodical cicadas comes to an end, they tend to emit a not-so-pleasant odor. So with a lot more cicadas, that means the stink will be more noticeable.
If you're not excited about cicadas like me, your silver lining is here. The adults maybe live a month. So basically, they come up, they mate, lay their eggs, and they're done. So we'll have cicadas out for 6 weeks. In May into June, more than likely, they die. It's going to smell really bad when they all start dying, because you're going to have billions. I've heard some estimations of, you know, over the entire emergence of these broods, which is going to be multiple states. They could be trillion plus cicadas emerging. So it'll smell unpleasant for a while. But yeah, they're done after 6 weeks or so.
Well, I mean, smell and noise. I mean, like, your line of work here has gotten very exciting for for us media people, and I think just your average citizen. So we've got a lot to look forward to. Good luck. Happy, whatever we call this, cicadathon or something to you. And yeah, this has been really great learning a little bit more today. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
As Ken mentioned, cicadas don't bite, don't sting, aren't toxic, and are free game for anyone who wants to eat them. So I figured, why not talk to someone who does? Renowned chef Joseph Yoon joins me to get a bit buggy after the break.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Billions of people around the world, represented in over 80% of the world's nations, eat insects. In America, we generally shun the idea of digesting, let alone enjoying, things like ants, scorpions, and crickets. But Chef Joseph Yoon thinks outside the box, Elder. Box. Joseph is an edible insect ambassador with the group Brooklyn Bugs, raising appreciation and awareness for edible insects and sharing the potential for innovation within insect agriculture. You may have seen him on TV or online already, serving edible bugs to people like Ryan Seacrest, Tucker Carlson, and even Grammy-winning rapper 2 Chainz. Joseph loves a good cicada, and we here in Illinois will literally be crawling with them soon. So we began our chat this week discussing what arguments he hears from people who turn their nose up at the idea of consuming creatures like this.
Well, the main reason why I hear Americans stating that they don't want to eat insects is because they simply don't have the knowledge and understanding of insects as food. And so they have what I consider neophobia, the fear of something new. And it's like, oh, we don't eat insects. And so what their association of insects are as a pest, as something that bites them, something that eats their plants in their garden. And they don't have the positive sort of ideas of the value of insects, and also just the idea that it can be farmed or harvested specifically for human consumption. What I love to do is to be able to share the knowledge and not be a bug pusher. I don't want to go around being like, hey, it's sustainable and healthy, so we have to eat it. And that sort of dogmatic approach, people don't want to be told what to do when they have this sort of visceral reaction against it. And so all I try to do is to provide the empathy to understand how people can feel disgusted or feel so like, oh, that's not food, and be able to offer the conversation the reasons why we're doing what we're doing, and really just try to like cross that bridge and offer up like a little branch of ants, maybe as an offering.
Well, going back, I mean, long before DoorDash, long before any of these things, this was a necessity, right? Like if we go back through history, tribes of people, I can absolutely see they had to eat what was around them. We could talk about pesticides and all that kind of stuff, but right there, it shows that like there's a history to this. There's really no denying that this stuff has been sustainable since the beginning of time.
One of the really big reasons why edible insects are considered sustainable is not because of the tremendous biomass and their availability in the world, because if we all of a sudden went out into the world and started foraging them, we would wreck our ecosystem and arguably do like considerable damage to the world around us. And so when we talk about the sustainability, it's through the rearing and husbandry of insects at the state-of-the-art 21st century vertical farms. And what we found is that in the farming of insects, they require far less resources by way of water, by way of the land space, the amount of feed required to convert an equivalent amount of protein as it would compared to traditional livestock. And so one of the great things that I love to encourage is that people have this very low denominator, this threshold, and they immediately go to something that's like a cockroach or, oh, you want to take away our steak. But what we're trying to do is like emphasize, hey, we're rearing these in a facility designed for human consumption. They're being processed at FDA approved facilities. And with an understanding of how to prepare them, they can be prepared absolutely deliciously, whether you want to see them or we could even hide them if you want. Our lack of imagination and understanding is really what comes down to this like great misguided like fear of like what it is. And so one of the really big things that we love to do when we host our events, we're serving up to 10 to 15 dishes because we want to demonstrate the broad applications of insect protein. Because people are too often think like, well, we have to eat this whole big bowl full of insects to eat the required protein. It's like, no, we can reimagine what these insects look like. That's really a big part, is like through the education and helping people to understand what exactly it can even look like.
Now, before you get your wok or your frying pan ready for some sizzling cicadas, Joseph warns us that if you have a certain kind of allergy, you may want to be on alert.
So the caution is that if you're allergic to arthropods, like shellfish, you may also have a sensitivity to other arthropods, like insects. And if you listen to the way that I phrase it, it's to emphasize that we're already eating arthropods like shellfish. We're eating crabs and lobsters and shrimp. But those are acceptable arthropods, but for some reason, their land cousins are not acceptable. But we also know people that might be allergic to just crab, but they could eat shrimp and lobster. So that's why it's like, okay, just because you are allergic to shellfish doesn't mean that you will also be allergic to cicadas. But with an abundance of caution, that's what we state, just to avoid any sort of like anaphylactic shock or any sort of allergens to develop.
What is the best approach to gathering them, to start incorporating them into meals? Is there a best time of day? Is there a stage they need to be at? What do you recommend?
Well, first of all, let me just say, wahoo, what an incredible time to be alive, to experience Brood 13 and 19, the convergence of these two cicada broods that last happened 221 years ago when this guy named Thomas Jefferson was the president of the United States of America. So what a great, exhilarating time to be alive if you are a cicada lover. Come on. The overview is this. If your neighbors are insistent on spraying pesticides all over their lawn, maybe you don't want to be eating the cicadas from an area with a risk of pathogens, contaminants, and or pesticides. we're expecting over a trillion cicadas to emerge. And so these cicada nymphs are wonderful to collect. They are a little harder, they're brown, and they have the exoskeleton that prevents them from becoming waterlogged. And so these are one, we could talk about the culinary preparation of these later. They will start climbing up to a high point, and they'll go from the nymph to the tenoral and become almost entirely white, ghostly white, with these two massive big black eyebrows. They're not eyebrows, but that's what they look like, or sunglasses. Then in a matter of like hours, those black fluids will start expanding and they will start turning black. The hemoglobin fluids will fill up their wings and harden their wings, and then they will become an adult cicada. And so these are the three primary stages of the cicada that one will be able to collect. The nymphs at the early stage, when the ground temperature hits 60, the mid-60s, you're going to start seeing them. And then a few weeks later, you're going to see the adults, and those will also be like relatively easy to collect as well.
Got it. So let's talk about prep a little bit. Are you marinating them? Would you blanch them? Like, what can we walk people through? I've seen boiling, obviously. You get them into your home. What's the next step from there?
Each of these insects are like dramatically different. So they require different preparation. So as we said before, with the nymph, they have a hard exoskeleton that prevents them from getting waterlogged. And so with those, some people have said like blanching them are good, just to mitigate the risk of any pathogens and to like make sure they're clean. And so if you want, yes, you could boil them for like 30 seconds, so like 2 minutes maybe, and then put them in some like ice water afterwards. I don't always do that because sometimes I just want to go straight to the frying pan. But the step that we have to account for first is that I typically always freeze all my insects. And that's typically, as an industry, something that's considered as a humane way to like gently kind of put them to sleep. And so first, I'd rinse them off and then freeze them to kind of put them to sleep, run them under cold water again to defrost it, and then prepare it for cooking.
As Joseph mentioned before, no one is saying we should eat bugs by the bowlful. So we talked about ways that you can incorporate cicadas into dishes you might already be making.
The usage of cicadas into everyday food is so easy. And really, when you think about virtually any dish that you love to prepare or that you love to eat, and in this case, like if we talk about stir-fried rice, I would start with the aromatic, some olive oil, get it nice and shimmering, preheat the pan, add some garlic, onions, and ginger. Just create a nice, beautiful aromatic bed, and then throw the cicada nymphs in there, and it will develop so much of that flavor. And the inside of the cicada nymphs have so much meat in them. They've been eating for 13 or 17 years. They're gonna be full of meat. And so preparing it in that way and then throwing in the rest of your veggies for your stir fry is like a really beautiful way to prepare them. One note regarding the adults do not have the same protection to be underwater. So if you were to boil a bunch of the adults, you're gonna liquefy a lot of their innards, and like it's gonna kind of just turn it mushy and not create something as desirable. So that's really for me what my preference is in preparing the adults. I wash, freeze them, and then I'll defrost it and then prepare to like cook it typically. And again, I would do the same exact thing. Fry the aromatics, add the cicada nymphs or adults, and then add your like sauces like soy sauce, mirin. If you want to add hoisin sauce or teriyaki sauce, whatever type of sauce you like to add, gochujang sauce, they will all like just like take on so much of that flavor. Some people that I've shared insects with, the cicadas, they're like, oh, I just can't. The wings freak me out. If you want, you can remove the wings. Have I noticed anything with the wings getting in the way of my personal enjoyment of them? No, not in the slightest. One of the dishes I really love and I think will be a real winner with WDVM listeners is fried cicadas. And what I love about fried cicadas is that, well, one, who doesn't like fried food? I mean, right. If you fry something or put it in chocolate, people are always like, oh, I could eat anything that's covered in chocolate, right? So I love to make a tempura batter. And with that, dip in the cicadas and fry it up. It only takes like a couple minutes. And then add some salt and seasoning to it, to the tempura batter if you want. Get yourself a nice dip. You know, one dish that I did not mention yet is a dish that I particularly love and that's near and dear to my heart, which is kimchi. And I, as a Korean-American, kimchi is like one of my go-to foods. And I love to make my cricket kimchi. I utilize cricket powder for my kimchi instead of oysters or fish sauce. And I love to add the cicada nymphs to my kimchi. It is magical. And a lot of times you add oyster or baby shrimp to your kimchi. And so then what's so weird about adding a cicada nymph to it?
Maybe you've had exotic meats in your lifetime, like alligator or snake. Often people say they simply taste like chicken. So what about cicadas? Joseph says the taste of a cicada can depend on two things: their age, as well as
what is their surrounding environment, what are they living near, what flowers might they be near, what the insects were eating for 17 years. All these things will have the nuance to alter the flavor profile of the cicadas. Now, there thus far has been no insect that I have eaten that has come remotely close to tasting like a chicken. Okay. Can you even describe for me the flavor of chicken?
Right. No, I really can't.
Without using the word chicken. Right. So right. I ask these questions of you, not to put you on the spot, Jim, but because I want to help people understand how challenging it is to actually describe the flavor profiles of something that is somewhat new to people. And so to me, one of the characteristics I feel of like the cicada nymphs is it's almost like a mild almond flavor, not when you first chew the almond, but just say you're like halfway through chewing the almond and you're getting ready to swallow it. Keep chewing it a little bit more. It's like that sort of flavor that I get off of a lot of cicada nymphs. The adults tend to have a little bit more of this fascinating vegetal quality. I mean, if you think about the fact that they've been living off of a plant and tree xylem for that long, that's not that surprising. And one of the things that I found to be really interesting is that some of them have this really unique, incredible floral flavor. And I think that's because I collected them from an area with heavy pollen and flowers, and they were covered in it. I rinse it, I freeze it. But I think that also kind of became a part of that flavor as well.
And you talked a little bit before about chocolate. I have, what dessert wise are we talking about? Because I mean, I love a good chocolate almond Hershey bar, certainly. So is that kind of like, does that help, you know, if you're putting chocolate on these things?
If you were to fry up these cicadas in some butter, right? The cicada, we're talking about the cicada nymphs again right now. If you were to fry it up in some butter and then add it to your desserts, like whether you're baking it or whether you're going to add it to chocolate, I've done like cricket, cicada, caramel honey popcorn. So it's like caramel popcorn that you get, but with the cicada that's in there as well. But the versatility of the baking is really incredible. With the adults, what I'm probably going to do is start making some cakes and press in the cicadas like on the top. So it's like slightly protected. And we're also usually baking at 325 to 375 and just be able to cut like pieces of a cake that feature either a caramelized or a buttery adult cicada as well.
This is great. Joseph, thank you so much. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have as well. Best of luck to you going forward. This is just amazing stuff, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge.
Thank you, WBBM. I really love being on here, and happy foraging, everybody.
This episode of Looped In Chicago was hosted, produced, and edited by me, Jim Hanke. WBBM's news director is Craig Schwalb, and Myron Kaplan is our managing producer of national news podcasts. You can follow us on TikTok at WBBM News Radio 105.9, as well as on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at WBBM News Radio for visuals related to all of our episodes. Thanks to our social team of Lauren Westfall, Anne-Marie Welser, and Sarah Dingman for all their hard work each week. Thanks for listening, and we'll keep you looped in again right here next week. See you then.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.